All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this. Chris Herndon. Chris Henry joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is End of July by the Illinois indie punk band Sarge. Obviously, it is the end of July. Lead singer, songwriter, band leader there, Elizabeth Elmore, quit punk rock to become a lawyer, which I imagine is the sort of your origin story before you got to sports writing.
The same, yeah. Do we know what's happened? Is she a success? Do anything about her legal career? Probably don't follow that as closely.
It's funny. She was in this band when she was in college, and then ended up quitting the band and going to law school and becoming a lawyer. Then at some point, she had another band called The Reputation, and they were at South by Southwest in Austin one year. I was down there, and I wrote about them a little bit in the context of this big like package of like my experience there. I wrote a little bit about her in the context of other bands who were like people who had broken up earlier bands and started new bands again, and she was one of the three, including Memphis' Greg Cartwright, who had done that, and someone else. But she's actually one of the few non-Memphis musicians who like wrote me an email, who like read it, wrote it, and sent me an email about it. But I think she's continued to practice law.
All right. There wasn't much NBA news over the weekend. Billy Donovan got an extension. Your thoughts on Billy Donovan and the Bulls?
I mean, the Bulls just want to. They're just keeping it steady, man. They want continuity in the front office and the coaching staff. They want continuity in their place in the 9-11 range of the Eastern Conference standings. I mean, Billy Donovan seems fine, but like, I don't know. Like, it's hard for me to judge him as a coach in the context of what he's had to work with. But it still feels like another move that signals no clear direction, really, other than stasis for the Chicago Bulls.
Yeah, I think that's one where the Knicks, actually, he's one of the coaches they asked about and were denied permission to talk about. It would be sort of more interesting to see Billy Donovan in New York, right? Like, to see what he had. Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah, completely. I mean, this guy won national titles in college and has had some success in the NBA, but he just hasn't had anything to work with, so it's hard to really judge him. Now, the Bulls were good offensively last season, like better than you would have expected. Maybe that's a sign of like a coaching imprint on the limited talent, but it's kind of hard. He might be a really good coach, but it's hard to know with the roster he has.
All right, so we this morning, it is, as you point out, the end of July. And in sports talk radio, what they do at the end of July is the show before us did a quarterback pressure rankings. And that's just silly. Who knows what pressures people feel, what pressures they're under. Like, the whole construct is a little silly. But we did a Memphis sports pressure rankings, and it does create the opportunity to think about where these people are, how pivotal this year is, where they are in the arc of their career and whatever. So some of the Grizzlies representatives who made our top 10 list of under pressure, higher or lower, are. So let me ask you about some of them and just tell me what you think about where they are now in their, how pivotal these years are. And I'll start with Zach Kleiman, because it feels like, you know, people always want to have Zach Kleiman under pressure. And I think you've said before, I don't know, ownership seems pretty comfortable with Zach Kleiman. And now he's reset the team. He's been given this chance to reset the team, which feels like it almost kind of resets his timeline as well. But he's made some big bets. Thoughts on Zach Kleiman and as he heads into this year?
I think it's funny. I've been this morning, I've been harvesting questions for Midsummer Grizzlies mailbag. And I have several questions about Zach Kleiman and evaluating him and, you know, along these lines. So I think he is under some level of pressure from fans.
Right.
I don't sense he's under any level of pressure from, like, his employers. I really don't. I've talked to other people in the organization or whatever, and just my general sense is, you never know, you could get blindsided by stuff. That happens in the NBA. But my general sense is, like, I think he's fine. I think they really have a lot of faith in him. And I do think even well-run organizations can make mistakes. In fact, well-run organizations make mistakes all the time. And we are still, like, hand-wringing about, like, taking Zaire Williams 10 3 years later or whatever. But I do think, having witnessed the ownership, front office, business, and basketball side, the whole shebang from day one since this organization's been in Memphis, I think when you take all those three things together, it's the cleanest and most professional and least messy it's ever been, if when you take it all in totality. There's been a lot of messiness over the years, you know?
No, I think that's right. And you're right. Literally just last week we were talking about the whiffs the Warriors have made, right? Like, could imagine, you know, you do the Wiseman pick, you do the Kuminga, like whatever, and you're fine. You're like, you pick the draft again, you know, whatever. I mean, right. And Oklahoma City's made their mistakes as well. I guess, so I don't think, and of course, because we don't talk to Robert Pera, we'll never get a true sense of whatever.
That's right.
But I think we believe that Robert Pera has faith in him. We believe that and it seems like he's done a fundamentally good job. I do wonder, though, he's made some bets here, right? So Jeffrey had on his list, on his top 10 list of most pressure, Cedric Coward. Now, I didn't, because I think to the extent there's pressure on Cedric Coward, that is pressure on the Grizzlies to be right about Cedric Coward more than it is on Cedric Coward. They have made, Kleiman has made, as he's refocused the franchise. If Desmond Bane just, you know, lights it up and Orlando is one and the Grizzlies are floundering and Cedric Coward looks like, you can imagine that this is like, you want this pivot to obviously work out well, to be trending in the right direction for him, right? I mean, he's made some bets that will either come in or not this year, or appear to be.
I want to scroll this back to something you said at the very beginning of the question, which was you sort of asserted, and it's not an incorrect assertion, but I want to elaborate on it.
Yeah.
You asserted, you know, they reset that, you know, Kleiman reset the franchise or reset the team or however you phrased it. It's interesting that's true, but the interesting thing about it is that they chose a path that has a fork in the road. Like they chose a path and the path itself has a fork. And that will lead me to some other people I'm sure are on your list, which is John Morant and Jaren Jackson. And so they have chosen this path to try to reformulate the team around John Jaren, but there's a fork in that road, which is to continue down that path or to blow it up, right? And that depends, I think we'll know more about that a year from today, or less than a year from today, but at the end of the coming season. And so I think, you know, they've given themselves some flexibility in terms of how they proceed forward, and that depends a lot on the things that happened this season.
We've always thought of Jaren's contract as a trigger for a fork. This is the way we've been looking for that. Is there a trigger for this? Is it Jaw's extension? Is that what we're looking at? Is that what's...
It could be Jaw's extension. Or it could just be Jaw's performance or Jaw's availability, right? These things are all related. It's possible that things go well and there's some impasse over an extension. We've seen this before in smaller ways, right? Like, it was Valanciunas got traded in part because they didn't want to give him an extension and he wanted an extension. So, that just happened with Norman Powell and the Clippers, right? So that is a thing that could drive something at some point in the future. But even short of that, it could be like, if John Morant plays 35 games this season and, like, can't stay on the floor, or if Ja plays a full season and is, you know, not an all-star level player, like, I believe if he's playing, he's going to be an all-star level player. But I'm just saying, like, if some of those things happen, then you start to recalculate what you think you can do with John Jaren as your core of your team.
All right, so we'll get to John Jaren in a moment. Isolo was on both of our lists, higher on Jeffrey's than mine. It's interesting. He's a first-year coach. They're given some grace.
It's almost like the Coward thing. It's like he's reflected back on the decision-makers who put him in that spot.
I think that's right. Like, if they get off to and I think probably, like, it's interesting because they're going to be injured at the start of this year. There'll be slightly lower expectations, yet because they didn't do a search, because he didn't light it up at the end of the year, he wasn't able to turn that ship around at the end of the year. Not that he should have been expected to. If they get off to a 2-7 start, I do think there will be, what the hell did they do in a way that would be quicker than a generic first year coach. Then if they gone to hire
I think it's a long season, and to your point, they're going to be starting with some issues, specifically Zach Edey, which I think is a big deal. I think it's less. I don't think they're going to I don't think the book will be written on Thomas Isolo if the team starts 2-7. But I think that will be a challenge to navigate out of that. Right? Like, it's a long season. Can you steer the ship through the rocky waters? And I think it will be less. It's less about do the rocky waters come than can you steer through it, which I think is a longer window. But I do think that I do think his ability to maintain the team and steer it through challenges is something that we'll be focused on. Yeah,
it's interesting because there's some of this is from fan that the fan stuff is pretty irrelevant at some level. Like, I do think there will be louder screaming if he is 2-8 than if they'd gone and hired Mike Brown and he was 2-8 right at the start of the year. What were they doing? Whatever. That doesn't really matter. What matters is internally, and what matters is his ability to reach the team, as you point out. Like, whatever happened. So whatever. I is there pressure on Isolo? I think there's always had pressure on a head coach in the NBA. In the NBA,
yes.
And they're ultimately disposable, right? We've seen guys get fired.
More so, sure. Yeah.
Okay. Let's go to Ja and Jaren. Jeffrey lumped them together. I guess I didn't have Jaren on my list. He's got his new contract. He's going to be Jaren Jackson. Like, I guess, you know, like.
Oh, no, I think Jaren should be on the list. I do think Ja is higher and more prominent on the list, so I wouldn't have them together. But I do think Jaren should be on the list because this is the big contract. Like, the one he was playing on wasn't that big, honestly, right, in the context of the NBA. And this one is the big contract. They're committing to you long term. Now, like, it's a contract that makes them easier to trade you, too. But that's not the point. They're committing to you long term, and they moved, they moved like a guy who, like, some people would perceive as the co-Robin to Ja Morant Batman. And now it's you. Like, you're the number two guy on this team. And there's some people who tell you he's the number one guy. I don't think that's true ultimately. But for the Ja and Jaren as the core to work out, like, that's dependent upon Ja and Jaren. And so I think Jaren needs to be he's been really good already. But, you know, it's been a little up and down in some ways in terms of good in some areas 1 year and then it dips. And, like, you know, he needs to be as good as he was last season, this season, and to be that level, all-star level player throughout this contract, you know?
All right. And that gets us to Ja. Thoughts on Ja? Like, Ja, whatever. No matter what happens, he's going to be big in China and selling shoes and whatever else. But this is a pivotal year for Ja.
I wonder if that whole thing is going to be good for him. Like I think it will be good. What I mean by that is that I suspect it might be good for him, not that I question it. Maybe that'll give him some momentum. He needs to reassert. We all know that, like, Ja's sense of himself and his happiness and all that, his mood connects to the level play to some degree. And I think he needs to reassert himself as, you know, a top 15 player in the NBA, top 15, top 20 player in the NBA, which I think is his talent level still. And he needs to do that this season, which means not only stay on the court, you know, for at least 60 games or whatever, 55, 60 games. He doesn't need to play 82, but needs to be there most of the time. And needs to play at that all NBA level when he's out there. And I think that really needs to happen for him this season, both for him and for the team. And I think having this sort of world tour and sort of, you know, it probably helps him from a self-esteem standpoint or whatever. And hopefully he can springboard that into the season. Of course, if he springboards up to the rim and gets knocked to the floor and, like, dislocates his hip, that all changes in an instant, which we've seen.
All right. Just a few others, by the way. Zach Edey, should he have been on the list? 10? 9?
I think the injury thing is a real bummer for the Grizzlies. And in terms of me projecting the Grizzlies win-loss this season, the Edey injury is actually a bigger deal to me than the Bane absence. But that's different from, like, pressure on Edey. Like, the injury is injury. Right. Not even the injury. It was an elective surgery, essentially. And so the surgery is the surgery. And I think his ability to come back from it this season and get back to the same level or hopefully better than he was last season is important for the Grizzlies. It's even more important for it not to disrupt his career long term. I think there's pressure on the Edey situation for the organization.
Right.
I think that's slightly different from being pressure personally on Zach Edey.
Well, and there's no other, as Jeffrey pointed out at one when we were talking about this, there's no other Zach Edey. There's no substitute for him on the roster.
That's part of my point, is that, I mean, Desmond Bane if you look at all the outgoing and incoming among the guard and perimeter players, I mean, Desmond Bane's the best player you would discuss among all those by far. But, like, the best defender is Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and the best ball handler playmaker is Ty Jerome, and the highest upside, the best athlete is Cedric Howard, and, like, all three of them can shoot in addition to those other things. And so there are lots of paths for the totality of the perimeter cast for the Grizzlies to be as good, if not better, than last season, even with the exit of Desmond Bane. That's not true at the center position with Zach Eadie.
We had others receiving votes, Gigi and Vince. Internally, there's got to be pressure for both of those. It's not, again, this is totally separate from the Grizzlies situation.
Well, these are guys trying to establish themselves, their careers, and get contracts beyond the ones they're currently on. And I think this season is really important for both of those guys. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I had both of us, honestly, this is a Memphis sports list generally. Both of us had literally the mayor as number one, and I had Jason Wexler as number two, because a lot has to get done in terms of that lease situation, which is a topic for another day. So did you go see Fantastic Four with your son?
Yeah, and I actually liked it better than him. This is on the short list of superhero movies where my opinion of it is actually probably a little bit greater than the consensus.
Uh-huh.
Like this and X2, X-Men United, which still remains my favorite. I thought this was good. Some of the castings, and Pedro Pascal, was that necessary? I mean, I think lots of other people could have been as good or better in that role. Eben Moss Bacharach is sort of wasted. Anybody's wasted doing the thing because you just see her in the voice and a CGI creature. You sort of lose that personality. But I like the design of it. I like all the action scenes are sort of comprehensible. And sort of like makes sense in terms of story and makes sense in terms of how, you know, various powers and abilities are being used. It's not just a blob of like smashing and fighting all the time. And the whole like family conceit of the Fantastic Four, I think, actually raises the stakes in some of this stuff. It's hard to get your head around like saving the world in some of these comic book movies. It's almost better to have it like, you know, like my pregnancy is imperiled or whatever. It almost feels more real. And so I thought it was good.
So Ben, what was his review?
He liked it, but he didn't like it quite as much as me. He was more into Superman. I was more into Fantastic Four.
And what's consensus?
Oh, I don't know. I think consensus is still developing, but I've heard a lot of mixed stuff on this one. And just for me to be more positive
than that, right?
On this kind of movie is fairly rare because I've gotten to the point where I don't care about a lot of them, you know?
Right.
Especially the Marvel ones.
Right. All right. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. So, Jeffrey, I would redo my list now. I wanna confess something. When I woke up this morning, I was like, well, what are we going to talk about today? Didn't know the topic, right? Didn't know the topic. And only when I turned into Unsportsman, in fact, I had other topics I wanted to talk about. Only when I turned on to Unsportsmanlike, which was 8:25-ish, and I heard them doing the pressure rankings for quarterbacks, did I think, oh, let's do this. And then I think what time did I text you? I texted you to come up with your list.
It was about 8:30,
maybe a little
before that.
So we came up with our list. I've been persuaded there's all kinds of different pressure, right? I didn't have Jaren on my list. How is Jaren Jackson and Alex Simmons, like, how do you balance those things, right? Alex Simmons, if she doesn't win as a University of Memphis women's basketball coach, I'm persuaded she won't have another job and may never get another job as another head coach, right? Jaren Jackson Jr. He's a gazillionaire who now has to live up to being a gazillionaire. Like, totally, wildly different kinds of pressures. But I was dismissive of the pressure on Jaren. I think there, and you and Chris both had him on the list, and I think any list that doesn't have him on it is a flawed list, I'll be honest. Jaren should be on that list.
To me, it's mainly just of the organization has like cleared it out of, okay, we're banking on you.
Right. But I think for Jaren personally, too, like here's the truth. Is Jaren... No one really thinks, like, league-wide, except for the nerds like Chris. I mean that as a compliment, right? You know what I mean? Who fall in love with Jaren's advanced stats and love Jaren
and appreciate
what he does at both ends, right?
Like
I don't think he's not really regarded as a all NBA level player. He's just not in modern fandom. He's like, oh yeah, he's a good player. Yeah, he doesn't even rebound. You know what I mean? Like, that's sort of the man on the street. And I mean that not just in Memphis. I mean that broadly. If he wants to establish himself as a level of star commensurate with his salary, he's got some work to do.
Yeah, I think the problem is, I think there's such a wide gap between those that are analytically driven in terms of their analysis and then those that are just man on the street. Like, man on the street really falls for brand. For like name recognition, whatnot, like that's how you wind up with James Harden on the
and raw numbers,
sure.
Your basic
points
and rebounds, you know,
assists. Like the difference though is, can he go from maybe not to like the man on the street thinks like, okay, this is a top 15 player, but can that be like someone that develops more reputation?
And then Jaws clearly won. I mean, if we put aside the fruits of the franchise in Memphis and all that,
they're only going to go as far as he goes.
Interesting point that Chris made about the China trip.
Yep.
You saw the dunk, the video of the dunk. You do wonder, and again, Ja is such a, like with Ja, you fret if you're a Memphis fan about his mindset. Where's his head, right? Where's he at? Like, what's he thinking?
Absolutely.
He at? I do like that idea that going to China and getting just adulation, right?
Yep.
That's what he's getting. It's not like he's not having to hear from the Warrior fan base about what a miserable human being he is or something like that, or that he's overrated or whatever. He's just has a billion people adoring his every move. I can see how that would be good for his psyche.
Yeah. No, I think that was a very fair point from Chris.
All right. Pressure's on y'all to get to O'Call because the semi-annual sale is underway. It is the spring and summer semi-annual sale. And listen, there's a lot of summer left. You can feel it out there right now, whether it's tailored clothing, whether it's sportswear, knit shirts, but men's, women's, throughout the store, 50% off. Up to 70% off. We've reached that sweet spot in the semi-annual sale. So this would be a perfect week to go on in and take advantage of the biggest savings of the year that you will find on spring and summer merchandise at O'Call, a legendary Memphis store. Clothes are beautiful. It's the same unbelievable service, unbelievable people, only now 50 up to 70% off throughout the store. Make this week the week you get yourself into O'Call. We're going to take a break. Back in a moment. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. If you're selling your home, call Josh Hysaw and the team at Keller Williams Realty. Listen, I was reading over the weekend in the Daily Memphian about how home sales are down and it's a tough market and whatever else. And that might be the market where you are tempted to go ahead and take an instant cash offer, but not from one of the folks who calls you with the robocall or with the email or whatever else. Hey, are you selling your home? No. If that's the way you want to go, and again, in this market, might make some sense. You don't have to pour money into fixing up your home. You don't have to have showings. You don't have all the suspense. You don't have waiting month after month after month. It is Josh Hysaw and the team at Keller Williams Realty. And unlike those, out-of-towners, Josh lives here. He wants you to get a full market offer for your home. He'll come out. He'll see your house. He'll tell you what it's worth. And then give you up to 4 months to pay. Easy as pie. So if that's the way you're thinking of going, plenty of reasons to do it, but no reason not to do anything other than to contact Josh Hysaw and the team at Keller Williams. You can check them out at joshhasthebuyers.com. All right, Jeffrey, we've done our official sports pressure player rankings. There was other stuff that happened over the weekend that we have not addressed, including the Grizzlies' preseason schedule came out. Do you see when you see that, what do you note? Do you care?
I mean, I get the updates from the Grizzlies PR account, And so it's mainly just like, okay.
When's it starting?
Exactly.
How far are we? It's, you know, it's like mainly in the end, dates. It's like, yeah, no, it's the dates. It's like, when are we going to have a game?
Yeah.
When are we going to have a game?
I'm not particularly focused on
it. I don't care who.
Right.
I don't even care where.
Right.
Right?
It's, like, to me,
it's just, when are we going to have, here we are, late July. We got to get through all of August and all of September. And then we're going to have Grizzlies games again.
Yeah, it's mainly like, okay, what am I going to forget once football season
so
starts?
So the schedule is October 6th is when it's returning, Pistons at home. Then October 8th, Celtics at home. Then October 11th, Hawks at home. So you start with three home games here at FedEx Forum, Jeffrey. You can see your home standing Grizzlies. Then to wrap up preseason, it's October 15th. And October 17th, that's the Hornets and the Heat on the road. So we just got 2 months. You know, you've had the flurry, you had the activity, whatever. Now we gotta wait. And happily, we'll have football popping up between now
correct.
And then, right? Including the Hall of Fame game later this week. All right, so that happened. We also had the news that Bubba Wallace won the Brickyard 400.
Yep.
We had the Tour de France. Are you a guy who gets into the Tour de France? Do you even watch? Some people watch the highlights every night. That's what
yeah. So they, I kind of like followed along. NBC would kind of periodically show the updates, like at their desk and whatnot. I definitely do not like.
I cycle, sort of. Not whatever. I do bike. I bike not as long as I used to, but I'll go on 20, 30 mile bike rides. I got a bike ride this weekend, 38 mile or something like whatever. And I don't ever, I still don't understand it.
So it used to be something I would
go ahead. Yeah.
I'd follow along a lot more when we had NBC Sports Network because it would run during the day when not a lot's going on. And you're like, all right, well, it's sports. I'll throw it on. I'll be able to kind of keep up. But now basically most of the action has been moved to Peacock. And it's like, I'm not really firing up Peacock to go watch the Tour de France.
It seems totally cool. I should get into it someday. A four-time winner, one of the truly greats, evidently, here.
The same two guys have won the last five. And they're just trading.
We also have we had the Hall of Fame, the inductions into the Hall of Fame. Ichiro was inducted. He had a funny line about he played, of course, for Seattle, and he played for the Yankees.
Yep.
And in there somewhere, he played for the Marlins. Do you recall that?
Yeah, I do remember him. Did he get traded to the Marlins?
No, because he said when he got the line from the speech was when I got the contract offer, I didn't know I'd never heard of the team.
Yeah,
that's what he said.
I think that might have been when they went from the Florida Marlins to the Miami Marlins.
I see. So it was the Miami part that he hadn't heard of. Anyway, that happened over the weekend as well. But what I wanted to focus on because I did want to get a little NFL talk, Jeffrey, before we wrap up today. What I wanted to focus on was what happened in Nashville.
Okay.
Where Treylon Burks with a collarbone. Okay. And here's the question. Like in the end, that trade, right?
AJ Brown
that
results
Eagles.
In taking Treylon.
Yeah. So well, and it was for the first round pick that was picked 18th in that draft, okay? And they had A.J. Brown. A.J. Brown was unhappy. And so they traded A.J. Brown to the Eagles, and they picked Treylon Burks. Okay? And then Treylon Burks has not been healthy. He wasn't good, and then he wasn't healthy. So last
correct.
Year, he wasn't good, and then last year was a torn ACL, and now he's got a broken collarbone. And so here's the thing. And so it not only is it easy to pound on that trade, it's appropriate, right? And people did at the time.
Yeah. People didn't understand what they were doing. And it cost the...
It should have cost him.
Yeah,
absolutely. All that's true. How is it different? How is it different than the Vikings trading Stephon Diggs, who was unhappy, great receiver, unhappy, to the Bills for a first-round pick, and they used it to draft Justin Jefferson? In other words, isn't it the exact same roll of the dice? And honestly, that was the one where the Eagles picked Jalen Reagor. Remember in that draft, before Justin Jefferson. So
that's where we have the famous clip of Mike Zimmer laughing when he hears that
they've taken
Reagor, and he laughs and he goes and immediately hands in the card for Justin Jefferson.
Right. So, but when they, it's not, they didn't make that trade once they knew that Justin Jefferson was going to be on the board.
Right.
They made the trade. And honestly, like that pick was, what was Justin Jefferson?
18, I believe.
No, I think he was in the 20s. I think Justin Jefferson was like 21, 22, something like that. So in other words, the Titans got, Treylon Burks was 18th. So they got a better pick.
You're right, 22 for.
This is my sweet spot, baby. This is a, this is my sweet spot. So so what is different about that other than one hit on Justin Jefferson, and the other one totally whiffed on Treylon Burks?
So the only thing contextually I'd say that's a little bit different was the Vikings organization had pretty much moved on. With the Titans, there was a power struggle. Vrabel wanted him back, and so like it wasn't. With Diggs, everyone had decided, time for everyone to move on.
I think there were two things that are the difference. One is, A.J. Brown was still in ascendance.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he had proven he was good, but he was not even yet at the peak of his powers. You were literally trading a guy who was ascending into the best version of himself he would ever be. I think the Viking, and was he a pain in the ass?
Yes.
I mean, maybe that's the way that they were similar, but was he only a pain in the ass in the context of the contracting? Or was he,
I feel like with
they were both a pain in the ass, right? Stephon Diggs was a, let's be honest, was a cancer. He just was. He was a cancer. And I think they knew that if they traded him to Buffalo, he might have a year or two that were good, but he was not, he was still at peak of powers.
By the way, they kind of were right.
They like, were right.
The
like,
first
that's
2 years of Steph, the first 2 years of Steph were great. It started.
But is it that different? In other words, did the Vikings not just get lucky and the Titans not lucky? Should we have more grace about the Titans? We look at what the Vikings did, and they were geniuses for trading Stephon Diggs. And I mean, it worked out for the Bills too because they got Stephon Diggs to help establish Josh as a star. But is it that different? Like, isn't it just? Let's be honest, trading a star receiver for a draft pick isn't the smartest thing to do, given that most draft picks, if you're picking late teens, early 20s, there's not a great hit rate. It's probably a 50-50 hit rate.
I mean,
and you're trading. So maybe, I don't know. That's my only question. We look at those things as totally different, but weren't they in fact the same?
I guess so.
Much
to me,
the same.
To me, though, there was more debate internally for the Titans of what to do with A.J. Brown.
Right.
And so, whereas the Vikings had clearly decided we are out of the Stephon.
No, but here's the other thing. Nationally, nobody ripped the Vikings for doing that.
Right.
Right. Maybe because everyone already knew that he was a pain in the ass. Right. And he's going to wear out his welcome. Right.
Yes.
No one ripped the Vikings for doing that. Everyone ripped the Titans for doing it. And it was appropriate.
And also with A.J., it's like, yeah, AJ can be kind of emotional and whatnot on the sidelines, but most of the gripe that AJ had was his contract. And everyone was like,
it was contract.
If this guy's not worth this contract,
right. Like, he's worth it. Pay
like,
him.
He, to every point that you just made, he's ascending. He's getting better every single year. This is someone you pay.
It was so stupid.
Yeah.
It was so stupid. All right. So, but then the other thing is I saw this point being made. Cam Ward, for a quarterback drafted first overall, gets less attention than any first overall quarterback I can ever recall.
We saw it at the draft.
What?
We saw it at the draft. I mean, this was an unbelievable story, and it was just kind of an afterthought.
It's kind of crazy. Like he is the next, you know, at least according to draft position, he should be the next franchise quarterback in the NFL. Now, every number one pick, we don't necessarily fawn over. If there's like the Chiefs drafted Eric Fisher once, a tackle, right?
And that when they had Parcells? No.
I think it was a bad draft. Like,
yeah,
he was a bad pick anyway, but I don't think it was a great draft. And obviously, there wasn't a big spotlight on Eric Fisher because he's a tackle. But I don't ever recall a quarterback drafted number one who people just ignore. Is that because
it was the Shador draft? Shador dominated everything in the draft.
I think it's because Cam came so late. Like, people didn't really understand he was going to be the number one pick. But it's also, I think, somewhat of a reflection on the Titans. I think the Titans weirdly, like nationally, is there a less relevant, put aside Cam Ward for a moment, is there a less interesting team in the NFL than the Tennessee Titans right now? Like, they've just been boring as hell.
I mean, the Saints are pretty boring.
Saints are pretty boring. And, well, now one has Cam Ward and one doesn't.
Right.
So,
I mean, the Panthers historically have been kind of boring.
Yeah, but they got Bryce, so that's interesting. Yeah. Like, the rise and fall and rise
Well, I mean,
again.
Like, even like the Jaguars, they're still interesting.
I mean, the Giants are whatever, but they're in New York.
Yes.
Like, so they're never going to be as boring. I just think the Titans, it's weird. Now, the problem is that Cam Ward goes to the Titans. I think he's good.
Yes.
I think he'll certainly be fun and will be interesting. But now he's got the situation, not that Treylon Burks was any great shakes, but his receivers are Calvin Ridley, who's been good.
Yeah.
I think he's had three straight 1,000-yard seasons or something. And then they've got Van Jefferson and Tyler Lockett, and then they got two rookie fourth-round picks.
Yeah.
Is he – now, they've redone the offensive line.
That's the key for me.
Is he set up to succeed or not in Nashville?
I think he's set up to have a good start. Like, but that's part of that is just expectations. Like, if they just win like six games, everyone's going to think
he'll be happy.
Yeah.
If he shows flashes and they win six games.
He's a fun quarterback, I can tell you that.
Like, but it's funny, though. We have seen now two straight years rookies who have been terrific. Why isn't he going to be judged against that?
I think it's because most people, like, if we look at the, like, last year, like, let's say the Jaden Daniels, if you will. Part of that is also, though, new ownership, everything's new in town, the vibe was just better. Whereas with the Titans, it's still like...
It goes back to they're still the Titans. They feel still
same,
the kind of
same ownership.
Titans.
You got the same coach that didn't really show very much last year. I mean, there's also just this reality of, like, Ward was just... always overlooked, and
he played in until he goes to Miami, no one really paid any attention to him, and then he goes to Miami where it's not like, with all due respect, he's not in the SEC, he's
right.
Not the Big Ten. Like,
well, they didn't make the playoff,
and they didn't make the playoff.
Now, I would argue not his fault, but they didn't make the playoff.
Other quarterback news. The Treylon Burks news led me to think about Cam Ward. The other quarterback news. We had Kenny Pickett. Pulls his hamstring.
Yeah, not a good time to pull your hammy.
Well, what's interesting there is, like, you look at quarterback battles, and legit quarterback battles, Browns legit quarterback battle.
Yeah, absolutely.
Saints seems to be a legit quarterback battle.
Yes, although it's might just be Tyler Shuck just might be their guy.
Might be, but they're conducting it as if it's Tyler Shuck, Spencer Rattler, and Jake Haener, too. Like, all three of them are getting reps.
Yeah, but they started today, they started splitting it.
Oh, did they?
Shuck is now one. Rattler's two.
Shuck is one.
Rattler's two. Haener three.
Colts seems legit. People were thinking it's just going to be David Jones, but Anthony Richardson. He's still only 23.
I think you have to try the Anthony Richardson thing
doesn't work.
Right, and then that's what Daniel.
Well,
Jones
what's interesting
is for.
In the Browns is, I think people assumed that it would be Flacco and then a young guy. Like, probably Shador, but the weird thing is that they went out and got Pickett before Flacco. They
Correct.
Tried harder. Like, they were more invested, if you just look at the investment in Pickett than in Flacco. And they were more, everyone thinks it's going to be Flacco and then Shador. Whereas, if you look at what they actually did, you might think it would be Pickett and Gabriel.
I think they wanted it to be Pickett, but now I think with Pickett, A, being just kind of okay in camp and then getting hurt, I think it's going to be Flacco.
I do think it was trending towards Pickett.
Yeah.
But does the hammy open the door for Flacco?
Oh, yeah. One more ride,
and
baby.
Then we'll see if it's Dylan Gabriel or Shador. Everyone feels like it's going to be Shador, but that's not who they picked first. All right, what's coming up next?
Here's what's coming next. Jason and John will be live and in studio. Jeff's going to join them during the third hour. Jason Munns will join Coach Hurd and I today on Jeffrey Wright and Company. David Cobb will be with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Back tomorrow. For now, work is done.